So this girl has a diagnosis of anovulation or polycystic ovarian syndrome. We cannot make the conclusion based on the information in this vignette alone that she has full-blown PCOS because we would need a pelvic ultrasound showing at least 11 cysts bilaterally in her ovaries as per the Amsterdam criteria. But for USMLE, it doesn't matter because the pathophysiology is the same. USMLE is going to give you an elevated BMI. You can see here it's 27. Just a side point that in real life, a girl need not have an elevated BMI, but for USMLE, they'll always give you an increased BMI. This means we have insulin resistance with hyperinsulinemia. So that is our answer here, increased serum insulin. And insulin resistance is going to precipitate abnormal GnRH pulsation from the hypothalamus, which will lead to an increased LH to FSH ratio. Why specifically hyperinsulinemia leads to this GnRH abnormal pulsation and an increase in the LH to FSH ratio? No fucking idea, okay? But it's what happens. And why this causes anovulation is because our LH is going to be the hormone that stimulates ovulation mid-cycle. FSH, obviously stimulating follicular development. So if FSH is low relative to LH, this means that by the time LH stimulates ovulation or signals for ovulation, the follicular development has not caught up yet appropriately, right? So rather than having a Graafian follicle rupture as a corpus luteum, we're simply going to have that follicle be retained as a follicular cyst, okay? So we get cysts bilaterally. They're called follicular cysts. They're just retained follicles. And something to note is that when the follicle normally ruptures and we get formation of corpus luteum, the corpus luteum secretes progesterone. So in patients who have anovulation or full-blown PCOS, they have decreased progesterone production during the luteal phase of the menstrual cycle. So this means that the balance of estrogen to progesterone, it's skewed heavily toward estrogen. We call this unopposed estrogen, which increases the risk for endometrial hyperplasia and endometrial cancer later in life. USMLE really, really, really likes that, where you can get a vignette like this with just anovulation or PCOS, and you need to know that the patient's at risk for endometrial cancer later in life, even if we treat this appropriately, which I'll talk about in a moment. But even if we treat this, still, because the woman has had a period of her life, even if a year or two of unopposed estrogen, still she has an increased lifetime risk of developing endometrial cancer. A lot I can talk about on that front. I don't want to get too clinical. I mean, they could tell you that there's bleeding per vaginum in a woman later, and you do endometrial biopsy if she had a history of a high BMI and anovulation. But association you need to make when you see a vignette like this, you need to say, okay, hyperinsulinemia, insulin resistance, increased risk of type 2 diabetes, all right? And then increased risk of endometrial cancer later, endometrial hyperplasia, unopposed estrogen. Now, when we treat this condition, the number one answer, if it's listed, is just simply weight loss to help bring your BMI into the normal range, because that in and of itself can sometimes help restore normal menses. If the USMLE asks for pharmacologic management, if they tell you she has no intention of getting pregnant, or they just don't say anything about her intentions, you're going to choose oral contraceptive pill. It just resynchronizes the endometrium. You can give her the progesterone and the estrogen that she needs, as opposed to her anovulation, where she's not going to have that progesterone production. If her weight is brought back into the normal range and her cycles have not naturally restored, and she wants to get pregnant, clomiphene citrate, an estrogen receptor partial agonist, can be given, which stimulates ovulation. It's a partial agonist, but it functions as an antagonist because its effect is not as robust at the hypothalamus and anterior pituitary. So the anterior pituitary and hypothalamus perceive a deficiency of estrogen and will increase GnRH, increase the gonadotropins to compensate. So that will stimulate ovulation. So, in just looking at the answers here once again, we would have an increased LH to FSH ratio, not a decreased ratio. Yes, the answer is increased serum insulin due to insulin resistance. In terms of serum progesterone, it would be a down arrow, not an up arrow. And this notably applies to the luteal phase of the menstrual cycle, the second half of the menstrual cycle, the secretory phase. Serum prolactin, it's not relevant here. We could make all sorts of tangential associations about like, oh, wow, but what about like, you know, how prolactin relates to GnRH, et cetera. It's something you don't want to overthink, okay? If a patient, let's say, had a prolactinoma, hyperprolactinemia can cause abnormal GnRH pulsation, but it's not the other way around, okay? And it's just not related to this question specifically. 5-alpha reductase synthesis, just a distractor here. I mean, testosterone will be converted to DHT via 5-alpha reductase. And although hirsutism is characteristic of anovulation and PCOS, there's no reason to assume that synthesis of that enzyme specifically is going to be increased. There would be, once again, increased conversion of testosterone to DHT, but increased synthesis of the enzyme is not something that would be salient in this condition. It could be argued that we'd have a suppression of synthesis since we already have increased androgen production, okay? So that's pretty much it for this question. Could do a long presentation on various things, but USMLE likes answers such as increased insulin. They like answers such as increased androgens and just unopposed estrogen, endometrial cancer risk, increased risk of type 2 diabetes. And okay, so that's our anovulation/PCOS. I'll do more on this topic. Okay, that's it.